I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. As geopolitical theater plays out on the world stage, from North Korea to Iran, today on Midday we focus on traditional theater as a changing of the guard takes place at Baltimore Center Stage. My guest is Kwame Kwe-Arma, OBE, its outgoing artistic director. Since February, he's been at the helm of the famed Young Vic Theatre in London. Since 2011, he has put a singular stamp on the Baltimore theater scene, and he has greatly advanced Center Stage's national and international profile. From a major renovation of their Calvert Street home to plays that originated here and have found their way to international venues, Kwame Kwe-Arma leaves a legacy of innovation and diversity. Plus, J. Wynn Russick reviews a new production of Peter Pan at the Single Carrot Theater. Kwame Kwe-Arma joins us in Studio A right after the news. The late, great Otis Redding, one of the artists who recorded for Stax Records in Memphis, Tennessee in the early days of American soul and R&B. His music is featured in the premiere of a new musical at Baltimore Center Stage. Welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today is the director of that premiere. He's the playwright, the director, and actor Kwame Kwe-Arma, OBE. He has been the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage since 2011, and now he has taken over the helm of the storied Young Vic Theatre in London. The show is called Soul, the Stax Musical, based on the story of Stax Records. It chronicles the rise of artists like Otis Redding, the Staple Singers, Isaac Hayes, Booker T and the MGs, Wilson Pickett, and some of the other great and early progenitors of soul and R&B. Kwame Kwe-Arma has been the animating force behind a number of new initiatives at Baltimore Center Stage. During his tenure here, he produced three of the best-selling shows in the theater's history. As a playwright, he premiered several new works here in Charm City, and he made great strides in diversifying the center stage audience. He also oversaw a major $28 million renovation of the theater's Calvert Street home, and in his spare time in 2012, Queen Elizabeth II made him an officer of the British Empire for his service to drama. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us here in Studio A as well. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page, and a little later in the program, we will take your questions and comments for Kwame Kwe-Arma. It's good to see you, sir.
It's great to see you, Tom. I feel a little sad, actually.
This may be our last one of these little chats for a while.
Yeah, it may be. And I'm in denial. And so actually being in this room with the both of you is making me a little sad, because you both have been magnificent supporters of Center Stage. And I suppose I'm just going to say it now. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for the work that you've done here, which has been really outstanding. Let's talk a little bit about this new piece. Originally, when you thought about the season, you toyed with the idea of actually writing a piece yourself for your final song.
Yeah, I did. And then I got a call saying, look, Stax record label, they're looking at doing a musical, and would you be interested in playing with that catalogue? And I went, what a beautiful way to leave, to put that music on our stage. It just felt really right. And so we began that journey.
And so you have someone who's written the book. You're directing the production, right?
Yes.
And I wonder, does it have resonance with a musical you did write around the music of Bob Marley?
Yeah. I think all of these kind of catalog-driven shows have some kind of synergy. I think what's interesting about this one is that actually, whereas Bob was a universal story, this is a really specific story about this record company that really was the first in terms of integration, in terms of, you know, Booker T and the MGs, and you look at the band and you know, and it's integrated. And I think that, and also it's in Memphis, the record label was active when Martin Luther King was assassinated. There's so much that is really local. It's a beautiful American story. And while we're at Preview 4 or something, and it's been, you know, as a director, you really only know what you have when an audience joins in.
Right. So you've done it four times, but you know, four live audiences, and the official opening is tomorrow night.
Correct.
Which Chandler and I will be there, and Judy will be there as well.
But the audiences have been singing along literally from the first song. And when, you know, you follow the travails of this label and the people who are at the helm, you can hear the audience kind of going, no, yes, oh. And I tell you, it's the most rewarding thing. So I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. And Judy, you and I have talked a lot about several catalog musicals. They come to the Hippodrome all the time. They've been at Center Stage. They present pretty unique challenges, don't they?
Well, they do. Often they are the catalog of one specific group, like Jersey Boys. There's a show coming out about the Temptations. Beautiful was a Carole King show. But to have one that is a catalog of an entire record label is really different.
And it's a challenge. You know, it's a challenge. You know, a label is a thing. A person, you go, okay, I know what their issue is, and you follow them. Trying to find a whole label and a story that people will follow has been a really interesting developmental challenge, I think. And Matt Benjamin, the writer, has been really game to just keep diving in and cleaning up and trying to see where the emotional beats are in their story. You know, we can't deny it. You go into these kind of musicals going, it's not going to be a jukebox musical. It's not going to be one of those catalog musicals. It's going to be different. It's going to be, you know, and you, I think you have to go in with that so that you don't just go, okay, well, look, we'll just do that, and right. You know, off we go.
You don't want to just press the formula button.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so, but actually you get to the end of the process and you go, actually, it is a jukebox musical. Actually, it is a catalog
and that's
musical.
Okay.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
It's a crowd pleaser. Yeah. And so long as you hit the right beats and so long as you attack it with integrity, that you're not just going as a formula, but you're going, what's the real story here? How can we set the songs up so that people want to hear that song in that context? That's always the unique problem. And I'm feeling today, you know, relatively confident that we may have done that. Interestingly, our dress rehearsal, which was 3 days ago, I was assured myself that we had not. It was the most terrible run that I'd ever sat through. I was so much so that at the intermission, I hid in the toilet and then I ran back out.
Never a good sign, is it? When you decide to do that.
Yeah.
I've hidden in a toilet or two myself in intermission. I know exactly
and
what
you
you're
go,
talking about.
But actually, the first audience came in and the show lifted.
Yeah.
And I feel we have something that people are going to enjoy.
And it's an important piece of history because, you know, people think about soul music, they think about Motown in Detroit. Yeah. You know,
Barry Gordy. Which has had a musical about it.
Yeah.
It was here recently, in fact.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Stax was the un-Motown Motown, right? It said it prided itself on going, we've got a Southern grit. We've got a funk and a soul. If Motown is polished, we're this thing that is organic and raw. And you hear it when you hear Otis Redding sing. You know, you feel the vibration of it, of its identity. You feel it when you hear Carla Thomas and Rufus or Isaac Hayes. And you get, the thing that I'm really loving about this experience, and I hope others will too, is that in the first act, we're really sat in the 60s. And then in the second act, we're really in the music of the 70s. And the 70s has its own cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
It has Jesse Jackson talking about I Am Somebody. It has Watt Stax, which is a huge statement, saying our music is going to speak to the needs of the people at the time. And so you have the Staple Singers singing, I'll Take You There. You know, there ain't nobody crying, ain't nobody lying. It's social music, particularly when it gets into the 70s. And that's beautiful dramatically, to be able to dance with music that wanted to be more than the sum of its parts.
And, you know, one of the things, something that's more than the sum of its parts is a great way, I think, of summing up what you've done in the last 7 years here. There was that hack playwright in the 1600s, his name is escaping me, Shakespeare, I think, who said, the past is prologue. You know, so as you move on now to Young Vic in London, a huge international position, and congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. As sorry as we are to lose you here, we're delighted for you
Thank
for this
you.
Great opportunity. What will you take from this past 7 years here at Center Stage? What will you take to London, back to London, your hometown, your stomping grounds for a long time before you came here to Baltimore. What of the past 7 years are going to stick with you and inform your work in this next phase?
Well, so much. I've learned everything about being an artistic director here at Baltimore Center Stage. I mean, I just have. I have learned, I came in a rookie director, and I leave feeling far more confident, aesthetically as a theater director. And as an AD, the thing I think I learned most here is the importance of community. We're here for the community. Nothing else, really. And this community here has been so supportive and so filled with love. And it doesn't mean that there were not challenges. There were huge challenges at times. But the support, and I don't want to get emotional about it, but I think I landed at the Young Vic in February in my first day. And I looked around and I went, oh my God, this is not Baltimore Center Stage. And I looked and the staff were different, and they were wonderful and they were beautiful. But I missed my staff. I missed my colleagues, the people that have executed the vision. I looked around the community, our renovation. You know, Britain isn't as philanthropic, personally philanthropic as America is. So when I look at our renovation, that was people who
talk about a makeover. Yeah.
Right? That was people who put their hands in their pocket in order to make that happen. That will stay with me all of the days of my life. Beneath This Place, the first play that I wrote here, the post-show party will stay with me all the days of my life. The support from the staff and the community and my board will strengthen me, will strengthen every part of me. Baltimore will never leave me. I mean, and I don't just say that. Everybody says, hey, I had a great time. I didn't just have a great time. I grew here. I grew as a human being. I grew as a leader. I grew as an artist.
Yeah, and Judy, the theater certainly grew too, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, for one thing, you got a third stage. But yes, and it is a case always, I think, of a rising tide lifts all boats. And Center Stage set a wonderful example there in many respects, not just physical growth, but the type of work, the involvement of the community, all of those things, I think, show up. I'd like to ask you, your successor at Center Stage hasn't been chosen, maybe at the end of the summer, I don't know. If you could give him one bit of advice, or her, if you could give her one bit of advice, what would that be?
Love the community. Hmm. I mean, it's as simple as that. The community is the tide. Seek and find their voice. Listen to them. Embrace them. And it's that. There is nothing else. Immediately that I landed at the Young Vic, that's what I heat-seeked. I went, community. Okay, good. How do we serve the community? What does the community need of us? And these are all lessons that I learned here. It's.
And I noticed, for example, at Young Vic, you're instituting a thing where for previews at Young Vic, £5, which
totally.
Is cheap.
It's all about access for all. I learned that here. You know, none of us in what we call, quote unquote, the high arts want it to be the high arts. Everybody wants it to be the popular arts. Everybody wants that 19 or 25-year-old on a Saturday night says to their partner, what should we do tonight? Should we go to the movies? Should we go to the theater, and that it's affordable and they know that they're being asked, that they're being welcomed in. I think it's really important for us to send those messages. And again, I learned that here. I learned how important it was to reach out to the different demographics of a city and say, you are welcome. And sometimes even seek that demographic and go to them, as we did with our mobile Shakespeare's and with our mobile unit, where we go to people who just wouldn't come into the four walls.
And it's been incredibly important that you were, as the artistic director of Center Stage, one of the few people, not only in this town, but in this country or anywhere in the UK, a person of color being at the top of the organizational chart. So in a city, and when we talk about community here in Baltimore, 60% of our citizens are people of color. Mm-hmm. It mattered a lot that a person of color was the head honcho at Center Stage.
Yeah, I mean, it also put a lot of pressure on me.
Certainly did.
Know, like, don't mess up, because you know, one often feels, and I'm sure this is for women as well as for people of color, though I don't wish to speak for women. But you know, one often has the pressure that when you are the first, or when you are recognizably representing a sector of a community, that if you mess up, you don't just mess up for you, but you mess up for them as well. And so there is that extra pressure. There's the pressure of that in London. Kind of luckily, I think I don't worry very much about the burden of responsibility. I worry far more about the burden of paranoia. You know, like, did they not like me because, and you know, and then I put race right at the bottom of that. And sometimes that is a, you know, that's a factor. But I worry more about that.
But you know, when you were appointed to Young Vic, people immediately pointed to the fact that, oh, he's one of the few directors of color here in the entire UK. Yeah. Or as you know, so has it changed much? I mean, what are the barriers for African Americans and people of you know, African descent in the theater business, in the fine arts, the so-called fine arts?
Yeah, and it's a hard question to answer, because I think that if I could answer it, then everybody else could probably answer it and could do something about it. I think one of the things I often say when I'm asked, particularly about diversity in the arts, is, you know, is just do it, without sounding like an old Nike commercial. You know, when I arrived at Center Stage, I think there were probably two people of color. Certainly no one at senior management level in the building. And when I leave, you know, we're at like 40% of our senior managers are people of color, and about 30% of our next level down are people of color. And actually, one of the staff said to me today, actually yesterday, said, you know, it's so wonderful to come in and see people of color at all levels of the organization when you're producing. And I think what happened is that people of color saw that I was the AD, but that's not enough. I think they saw that our ambition was to create the best possible work. Sometimes you win and sometimes you don't, right? But that our ambitions were to do that. And I think that meant that they went, well, that's probably a place that I might be welcome and that I might want to go and place my art with. And I think that just attracted many people to the organization. And what I mean, you know, I'm talking gender and I'm talking sexuality and I'm talking race. I'm talking that I'm so proud of the diversity of our organization, because we can stand head to head, if not more, than any organization across America. I'm absolutely sure. We did a challenge the other day. We did kind of like, you know, we took a photo of everybody of color and we said, okay, off you go. Now other theaters and others couldn't join us because we're right out there. Yeah. And that's not about me. That's about our board saying this is important. That's about the city saying this is important. That's about our staff and our managing directors saying this matters. We are doing business in a different way now. And I'm so glad that we were able to do that.
Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, he is our guest. I'm here in Studio A with Jaywin Russick, our theater critic. I'm Tom Hall. Kwame Kwe Arma, the outgoing artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage since February. He's taken over the reins of the Young Vic Theater in London. His last show here in Baltimore is the world premiere of Soul, the Stax musical, which opens tomorrow night. We'll have more with Kwame Kwe Arma and Jaywin Russick when we return. 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Here's Kwame Kwe Arma, the vocalist, singing with trumpeter Hugh Masekela. This is a tune he wrote called Call on Me.
That's hilarious. Better put out this offer, and it's unconditional. Call on me. I said, call on me, yeah. Call on.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Wilson Pickett, The Midnight Hour from 1966. That's one of the artists featured in Soul, the Stax musical, which opens tomorrow night at Baltimore Center Stage. By the way, coming up a little later today, Jaywin Russick will review an LGBTQ plus version of Peter Pan at the Single Carrot Theater. And coming up tomorrow on Midday, Jill P. Carter and J.D. Merrill are running in the Democratic primary for the state Senate seat in District 41. That's the seat being vacated by Nathaniel Oakes, who has pleaded guilty to fraud charges. Jill Carter and J.D. Merrill will be my guests here in Studio A, part of our Conversations with the Candidates series. Plus, BSO Pops conductor Jack Everly joins me to talk about this weekend's performances of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us today, my guest is the director of Soul the Stax musical, Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE. He has been the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage for the past 7 years, and that tenure is coming to a close. He is now the artistic director of the Young Vic Theater in London. So you are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to find us on Twitter @MiddayWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Kwame, we have an email from Lawrence, who said, I've read that Kwame Kwe Arma adopted that name at age 19, which is true. I associate the name with the Ghanaian author of The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born by Ayi Kwe Arma. Is there any connection? You were Ian Gordon.
Roberts,
until the age of 19. Yeah.
Yes, I was, and then I did a genealogical study and got my family back to the slave fort that we came from, and then reclaimed an ancestral name. Ayi Kwe Arma, who I've met, who is one of the most magnificent writers, is from the same tribe. And so yeah, there is no real connection other than that. But when I met him, actually, is a very funny story, at least funny to me. I was in Senegal doing a festival, and he lives in Senegal. And I got a message saying, Mr. Ayi Kwe Arma would like to see you, would like to have an audience with you. And so I went, great. I had my cousin with me, and we drove for hours, and we went to his home. And then he looked at me, and he said, I get letters all of the time.
saying,
I've seen your son on British television, and your son is doing well, and et cetera, et cetera. And he asked me how come I got to the name, and I told him. And then at the end of our two-hour audience, he said, I just want to let you know, I approve. Welcome to the family. And my cousin who was with me at the time broke into tears because it was it was like I approve. So that's the answer I give.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that was a bit of a reinvention of yourself at age 19.
Yeah.
And as artists, we're always talking about how we've got to keep reinventing ourselves. Mm-hmm. The theater has to reinvent itself for a new generation. It's a different deal in 2020 than it was in 2010, or certainly in 1990.
Absolutely.
You know? This impulse towards this reinvention, what is the reinvention of the theater looking like internationally?
Oh, I think that's a brilliant question. And I think that one of the things I'm doing at the Young Vic is I'm investigating artificial, or I'd say VR and AR. I'm going to do a project that's about finding a narrative that can live within within virtual reality and augmented reality. And I think that why I'm really interested in that narrative is because I think that we need to send messages out to the new kind of makers of art, that theatre will take everyone and anyone and is interested in storytelling. And there's not an artist that I meet under 30 who just describes themselves in singular terms. So it's a 19th century concept. I was a banker, you know, or I was a theatre director. You're kind of a theatre director when you're making theatre, and then you're a TV director when you're doing TV. You're an artist. And so I think we're going to have to do a couple of things. Number one, we're going to have to change the way that we look at the classics. The classics are the timeless classics that have been timeless classics up until now are not serving gender politics, are not serving racial politics. I think we have to find ways in which these everlasting stories can find relevance today. And I think that's going to be the next generation's kind of gig, is going to do that and not throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think we're also going to have to look at new technologies and the way that new technologies can be used, not just to tell audiences what's happening, but the work that's on our stages. And then I think finally, we have to revolutionize the way that we run organizations. I think most theatrical organizations are quite opaque from the outside, and we're living in a world of transparency where we like to see how our food is cooked when we go into restaurants, where we like to see the
inside. Seeing how the sausage is made is the new thing.
It's the new gig. And I think that we're going to have to really challenge ourselves to be less opaque and more open. That's not saying more democratic. There should always be leadership. But we have to find a way to hear more and hear deeper.
And Judy, it's interesting to me that it seems that an awful lot of theaters are purposely carving out a little niche for themselves. You know, we're a women's theater, we're a gay theater, or a LGBTQ plus theater. We are a theater that only does experimental music. You know, whereas Center Stage, you know, you can hear, you see a Shakespeare play there one time, or you could see a new musical by Kwame Kwayarma. I mean, is there a tension, do you think, in the theater world between generalizers and niche companies?
It's a tension. It's a healthy tension. I think that one of the reasons some of these smaller theaters are having a specialization is because they are filling in gaps where that specialty didn't exist before or wasn't recognized. And what a theater the size and scope of Center Stage can do is work in a lot of those specialties into various works of various sizes on various stages, and sometimes involving the community. I mean, at Center Stage, you see that multiplicity in the audience. You see it in the selection of plays. You see it in the casts on stage. And there are just a lot more resources in a regional theater than in some of the smaller theaters. But I think in Baltimore, the way they tend to feed each other is a very healthy thing.
It's theater critic J. Wynn Russick. I'm Tom Hall. We're here in Studio A with Kwame Kwayarma, OBE. That's the Order of the British Empire, for his contributions to the world of drama. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. A couple of attaboys from Facebook. Joan writes in, "The young Vic is so lucky to have you." Jerry writes, "My favorite show with my family, Animal Crackers, when you got Bruce Nelson from Everyman. It was hilarious." And also says, "Well done and best wishes. As a white suburbanite from Annapolis, it was always gratifying to me to see the diversity of my fellow audience members."
Thank you.
People ask you all the time. I mean, Judy asks a question that is something people are very interested in. What's your advice to your successor? What's your advice to audiences for theater?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. I think as I get older, I realize what's so special about theater. That's not saying that other genres and other things are not. But what's so special is that when you look at a narrative on the television or in the movies, invariably it's quite literal. You're set, you're in a bathroom, you're in a bathroom. You're on the moon, you're on the moon. And the beautiful thing about theatre is that it's non-literal. That means you've got to work. You know, if it's a telephone invariably in a scene, well, I won't have all of the telephone. I'll just have the wire or the handle or the bottom. And so you have to do the work, and it keeps the brain moving. And so I think for me, the most important thing as an audience member is to go in and expect to do some work. Expect to have for things to not be literal. I think there's joy in that.
Let's go to the phones. Brenda in Eldersburg, welcome to Midday with Kwame Kwayarma.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom and Kwame. Kwame, we've met a couple times. I'm a real small person. And a Center Stage, I wrote to you when I found out. Through Center Stage, of course, I'm a volunteer. And I was the one who suggested Catonsville 9 because of the time period, of course. And you do you've done Center Stage and all of us such a wonderful job, really, of introducing plays that are apropos for the time period that we're going through, where a lot of us are suffering through, and the realization of theater bringing everything to a new dimension.
Yeah, well, Brenda, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it.
I really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Let's go to Dave in Baltimore. Dave, welcome to Midday with Kwame Kwayarma.
Hi, thanks for this opportunity. Really love some of the productions, the Friday Night in Miami, and then, of course, the Marley. And I do want to compliment you. If this was your idea to go down to Sandtown Winchester and totally. And do some performances of Marley, and
absolutely.
I guess just curious if Marley went on to other venues or stages. I thought it was tremendous.
Well, thank you for that. Yes, it opened at the Birmingham Rep last year to great acclaim, and pretty soon, though I've said this before, but pretty soon there'll be an announcement about its future life in London. So I'm very proud of. If there's a thing that I'm most proud of in my time here was taking Marley to Penn and North. That's the thing that defined me to me, that and it made sure that we were sending out the signals that we're here for the community, and the community returned that love.
Yeah, and I think the two of the most poignant things that happened after that violence and unrest were that the library at the corner of Pennsylvania North stayed open the next day, God bless Carl Hayden and the staff of the Enoch Pratt Library, and then Center Stage brought that music of Bob Marley right to the corner. Really important. And of course, Marley is no longer called Marley.
It's now called One Love.
Continues to evolve, so keep your eyes out. That will be happening. And Judy Rusick, it was not by any means a commonplace thing for shows that started at Center Stage to find themselves in theaters internationally or New York, but now that's starting to happen.
Well, and I had a feeling, Kwame, when you took over Center Stage, that instead of shows possibly going to New York or to other theaters in this country, although some did, that we might see them jump across the pond. And certainly Elmina's Kitchen was done abroad. And the caller mentioned One Night in Miami, which you did, I think, at the Dunbar Warehouse. So
got
I hope that
for an Olivier.
Wow.
Which is great.
I hope we will see some of that motion coming back towards us. That would be very nice. I have to ask you also, you accomplished so much at Center Stage on so many levels, but is there something that you didn't get done, something you wish you could have gotten done?
Yeah, the loads. and not because of me, but actually because of the 50-odd year history of this theater and what it's been doing and the quality work that it's been doing. I really wanted to get the regional Tony. I really wanted to bring that. And again, not for me, and hopefully the next person will, because actually the community deserves it, because it's done such sterling work for 50-something years, I think. And I think that's the biggest one. You know, I wanted One Love to have opened before I left in the West End. I would have loved that. That was big investment from the theatre, from the staff, from everyone. And so I really wanted that. But I'll be glad when it happens, because I'll also then I can come back over to Baltimore and jump on a plane and say, come on, let's all go over and celebrate it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, you know, obviously New York and London remain the sort of, you know, motherships of theater internationally, but regional theaters across the country, and you've directed at many of them. You've been out in Oregon. You've been in several of the mid-sized theaters in New York and other places. But it's no longer limited to New York and London by any means, or Chicago or Washington, which has a very, very vibrant theater.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, one of the things I was really proud of is that we were able to send Detroit 67 to Detroit for the Detroit Public Theater's first production, you know, and we were able to mentor them as a bigger organization. That for me was, and you know, one of our board members gave us some money in order to help that happen. I mean, such is the quality of that group of people. I was really proud about that. You know, I and you're right, I often would go and work at the Public. Well, in London, to have a play of yours bounce to the Public Theatre in New York is huge. It's equal to going to Broadway.
Sure.
And aren't you working there this summer, in
I
fact,
am.
With
That's
12th
correct.
Night in the Park?
Correct, yeah. Correct. And so, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It's no longer just about London. It's no longer just about, and for me in London in particular, because of Brexit, it's going to be really important that I get work that transfers in and out of Europe, so that we send and fly the flag that Britain and London is open and is not closing down. So you're absolutely right. It's not just about London and New York. It's about making sure that we feed the ecology.
One of the data points that folks can point to gives people pause about the business of theater artistry. When you announced your intention to move to Young Vic and to leave Baltimore, Center Stage, you know, starts a search for your successor. There were some 20 other theaters also looking for artistic directors, and as many as 40 theaters looking for managing directors, the position that Michael Ross so ably holds now at Baltimore Center Stage. What's that all about? The fact that there are so many openings at, you know, very strong, well-established regional theaters like Baltimore Center Stage.
Well, A, it's a brilliant moment, right? It's we'll look back at this time and we'll go, that was the next wave. And I think it's in America, invariably, artistic directors or founding artistic directors, they land and they kind of do 15 to 20 years. And then, you know, I think to serve a community for 20 years is a really, I mean, it's taxing intellectually, it's taxing physically. And also communities begin to change. And so I think this is really healthy. I think that we'll also see a change in gender. In terms of how many women are running in major institutions. We'll see how many people of color are running major institutions. I think this is a wonderful moment where American theater will set itself up for the next 20 years. And then in 20 years' time, we'll have to, it will, you know, it will kind of have to start again. But it's a brilliant time.
And I've always thought, Judy, you know, as a musician, a classical musician, and Kwame and I have even worked together, and you've narrated things that I've done, and we've had a good time, that of all of the art forms, dance, jazz, pop music, classical music, theater has the capacity to connect with people in a visceral way that I think none of the other art forms have. I mean, you can admire the artistry of a great jazz pianist or a great soprano in an opera, but there's a distance there when you're admiring somebody's artistry, whether if that's the sum total of the artistic experience. But boy, if you're in the theater and people are communicating with each other, the communication, the visceral communication to the folks in the seats, is just unlike anything. I mean, you're a theater junkie. You've been one for a long time.
You're telling a story. It's a very direct communication. You're all breathing the same air. You're all in the same story. And theater can be very immediate. It can take TV and it can take the movies a while to put something together. But theater can respond to the times, to the zeitgeist immediately. And theater companies take that and run with it. So audiences, I think, hunger for that.
And I also think that, you know, we're fortunate in that we can put everything on the stage. And a musical can have great acting, great dancing, great music, virtuosic performances in all areas. I mean, if you get it right, that's the beautiful thing. We can have every art form with projections. We can have movies going on. We literally, it holds everything in it. It's why it's so powerful for me. I often say you can feel the spit and see the funk. Yeah. You know, it's like it's there. And you're absolutely right about the communal experience. I would finally say on that for me, I think, you know, theater is church. We live in a time where people don't go to church in the way that they used to. But actually, people who want to think, who want to have their souls questioned, who want to have their minds stretched, that actually going to theater can fill many of those spaces. It's church, and we want to do it together. We want to hold our hands together. We want to clap together. And that's something that's very special about the human being as a species, and something that theater, I think, taps into rather uniquely.
Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is concluding his 7th season as the Artistic Director of Baltimore Center Stage. He's now the Artistic Director of the Young Vic Theater in London. His final show at Baltimore Center Stage is the world premiere of Soul, the Stax musical, which opens tomorrow night at the theater on Calvert Street. We'll have more information about the complete schedule of performances on our website, wipr.org/midday. Thank you, sir. It's been fun. And I hope and I know our paths will continue to cross.
They will. Bless you both. Thank you so much.
Good to see you. Coming up after a break, we turn our attention to another theater here in Baltimore, the Single Carrot Theater. Jaywin Russick returns with a review of an LGBTQ+ version of Peter Pan. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.